Chapter 22. 2:30 in the morning found Greg lying on his back, hands behind his head, staring up at the blackness which hid the bedroom ceiling. He could hear the reservoir's wavelets swishing on the shore outside. The deer had come to drink under cover of the night, venturing out of the new persimmon plantation at the back of Berrybutt Spinney. His fading esper sense perceived their minds as small, cool globes of violet light, timid and alert. Eleanor had been entranced with them for the first couple of weeks after she'd moved in, waiting up each night to see them slip furtively out of the trees. The afternoon rain had lowered the temperature appreciably, but sleep was impossible. Intuition was running riot inside his cranium, even though he'd ended the gland's secretions. Swirling random thoughts clumped together, producing an image. It didn't matter how many times he told himself to forget it, the image just kept reforming. The same one, over and over. Eleanor let out a soft hum and wriggled slightly. He hoped he featured in that dream. No good. He wasn't going to sleep. Greg went through the usual mincing motions as he slid gingerly out of bed, making far more noise than if he'd just done it properly. Eleanor sighed again. He pulled the duvet up round her bare shoulders, then put on his toweling robe and went into the lounge. Through the chalet's front windows he could see the moonlight painting the checkerboard pattern of Hambleton Peninsula's meadows and orange groves in mezzotint contrasts. Silent and serene. Strange how remote it seemed from the kind of global-class corporate battles fought only a few kilometres away in Peterborough. He sometimes wondered if a day would come when he wouldn't be able to leave, giving up on the external world and all its conflicts. And who would really be hurt if he did let go? Certainly not Eleanor. Greg closed his eyes. But instead of Rutland Water's landscape, there was only the taunting image. Not this time, then. He disconnected the Event Horizon Terminal's voice input, opting for the silence of the touchpad keyboard so Eleanor wouldn't be woken. That done, he began to set up a link to Gracious Services. Even Royan wasn't clear on where the circuit's name originated, but under its auspices England's hackers would pull data from any WHERE memory core on the planet. For a price. Greg logged into Leicester University's mainframe and entered a cut-off program that had disengaged the instant anyone tried to backtrack his call. Royan had written it for him years ago. He couldn't afford to be anything but ultra-circumspect dealing with Gracious Services. He didn't want any of its members uncovering his own identity and selling the information in turn. The ultimate irony. The average hacker had a moral code which made an alley tomcat a paragon of virtue by comparison. After confirming the cut-off's validity, he routed the link through another cut-off in the Ministry of Agriculture, on to the Dessau Bank in Switzerland, crediting it with a straight £10,000 new sterling direct from Event Horizon's central account. After that, it was just a question of establishing two more cut-offs, one in Bristol City Council's finance mainframe, then on through the CAA flight control in Farnborough, and dialing the magic number. Gracious Services had a nonsense number. There was no phone on the end of it. But every English telecom exchange computer in the country had been infiltrated with a catchment program that would slot the caller directly into the circuit. Never, not once, in all the years they were in power, did the PSP manage to tap the Gracious Services circuit, nor expunge the catchment program from telecom's exchange computers. They tapped individual phones and caught people using Gracious Services that way, but that was all. Rumour had it the card carriers used the circuit themselves on occasion. The terminal's flat screen snowstormed for a second, then printed, "Welcome to Gracious Services. We aim to please." Data found, or money returned. No access too big or too small. Just remember our cardinal rule. Do not ask for credit. Please enter your handle. Greg typed Thunderchild, his old army call sign. Good morning, Thunderchild. Your umpire is Wild Ace. What service do you require?
Physical location of individual.
Okay, Thunderchild. I've got 7 hot rods raring to burn for you. Is this going to be a global search?
I believe the individual to be in Europe, quite possibly in England.
This is the way it is, Thunderchild. A Europe-wide search will cost you 4,500 new sterling. If we get a negative result, that means your target isn't in Europe. It'll only cost you 2,000.
If you want us to run a global search, it will cost you 7,000.
Okay.
Run a European search for me, Wild Ace.
You got it.
I hold the money. I decide how it's split. Sounds good.
Deposit £4,500 new sterling into Tizimund Bank, Zurich. Account number WRU2384ASE.
Greg entered Wild Ace's number, authorizing the transfer from his Deso bank account.
Okay, Thunderchild. Your credit is golden. Who is the target?
The image coalesced in his brain, rock solid, grinning arrogantly, and he typed, Kendrick de Gurulamo. Greg's imagination painted the picture for him. Seven people scattered across England, dark, anonymous figures hunched over their customized terminals, mumbling into throat mics, touch typing, watching data flash through cubes. It was a race. The first one who satisfied Wild Ace they had the correct answer would get the money, less Wild Ace's commission. Reputations were made on the circuit. It took 20 or 30 runs, successful runs, before anyone could even think about going solo. Royan had trained himself on the Gracious Services circuit. He could have gone solo, running data snatches against combinates for the tech mercs. But, of course, he had a different set of priorities. Greg sat back, wondering if he had time for a drink. He didn't have a clue how long the run was going to take. He didn't use the circuit often. The last time had been almost a year previously, tracing a money sink set up by Simon White's accountant. Whatever he asked for, Gracious Services invariably produced an answer. Their only failure to date had been confirming whether or not Leopold Armstrong had died the day the PSP was overthrown. They weren't alone. New conservative inquisitors had drawn a blank. Even the combined ranks of the Mindstar Brigade vets had been stumped. Most people thought he was dead, including the surviving top-rank apparatchiks. Possibly trying to create a martyr, Greg thought. 2 years was an impossibly long time to remain hidden if he was alive. There had been very little of Downing Street left after the electron compression warhead had detonated. The explosion created a deep glass-walled crater 100 meters across, flattening every building for 500 meters beyond its rim. Hundreds of silver rivulets scarred its slopes, molten metal which had solidified as it trickled downwards. The only human remnants were individual carbon molecules, mingling with the oily black pall clotting the air overhead. Some said the warhead was American, others Chinese. Both had denied involvement. But it had to be one of the two superpowers. They were the only nations who had mastered the technology. Neither had seemed a likely candidate to Greg. There had been talk in Turkey of the Northern European Alliance buying some electron compression warheads from the Americans. The weapon that would turn the tide was the Squaddies Camp rumor. It could have been deployed to take out entire airfields or tank battalions, mega-tonnage blasts without the radiation and fallout of fission weapons. Rich man's nuke. Nothing had ever come of it. So Greg reckoned that if the Americans wouldn't hand them over to the Alliance, they were even more unlikely to give one to the urban predator gangs which claimed to have smuggled it into Downing Street. Certainly the new conservative inquisitors never bothered to find out. Greg had made his small contribution to the search for Armstrong, but for once not even his intuition could say whether the president had survived. He had no belief one way or the other. He just wished Armstrong dead, 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 burning in Dante's hell for evermore. He gazed out of the chalet lounge's window while the unbidden reflections drifted past, bringing the associated emotions back with them, the elation and the suffering, flames and laughter. 17 minutes after Gracious Services began the search, his terminal's flat screen came alive again.
Got him for you, Thunderchild. Kendrick de Gurulamo, currently on board his yacht Miriam, docked at Peterborough's New Eastfield Marina, berth 27.
Thank you, Wild Ace, Greg typed.
No problem. Hot Rod handled blueprints, burned him for you. Says if you want another run, he'll be happy to oblige. Fee negotiable.
I'll remember.
Pleasure to do business with you, Thunderchild. Wild Ace, signing off. So, Kendrick was in Peterborough, was he? Close to the action. How convenient.
Greg made one final call, then headed back to the bedroom.